The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Understanding Satan's Kingdom Number 3, a message given by Mr. Robert Burke, for the morning service of the third day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Townsend, Tennessee, October 19th, 2024.
So we've talked a lot about the religious deception that Satan has foisted upon this world ever since the beginning in the Garden of Eden, because Satan wants people to reject God's truth. We understand that. All cultures, all nations, all people have been caught up in this deception. And there are many different varieties of the deception. But in the end, it's really the same because it's not God's truth. The names might change, the images might change, but if it's not God's truth, it is part of Satan's deception. And we as carnal human beings will fall into it because there are so many varieties of deception out there. Our minds are naturally going to gravitate towards the style of deception that we personally like. Because that means we get to do what we want to do, and in the end, that's what we as carnal human beings want to do. We want to do what our mind says we want to do. And our spiritual deception is that we convince ourselves that we are obeying God, but in a way we're not. Right? Because we're going to partially observe him and follow his rules. And Satan's going to give the tools and the means out there for us to fall into his trap to not do it properly. Now, the rest of the world is deceived. And we heard this morning how beautiful the world is going to be during the millennial reign. And I think all of us can look forward to that and say, it is not good right now. And that's why we're going over the messages here. But in the future, God has prepared something wonderful for all of us and for our children and anybody that makes it through into the millennial reign. It will be the establishment of perfection. So do you want the establishment of perfection? Do you want to be a part of that perfection? And I think we do. We want it for ourselves, and we want it for our family members, and we want it for our children. We have God's truth so we can access it. But we've seen in the past, others have had God's truth as well. And they have had the opportunity for blessings, direct blessings from God, but they chose something else. Whether it started with the Garden of Eden, or if it came down to Ham, Cush, and Nimrod, and those after that, even ancient Israel, God's truth was preached, it was known. People had the opportunity to follow it, and they chose not to. And they chose not to in part because they did what they wanted to do, but there were things out there that allowed them to do things that they wanted to do. And that really is just the society and the world around us and around them, right? How did they live? How did they behave? How did they interact with each other? And along the way, they were supported by a style or a system of government that was anti-God. And this style or system of government has been in place from the very beginning, all the way through the course of time, is in place now, and it is a way in which Satan can provide support to us if we want to follow our own carnal minds and not follow God. So part of the reason is, why does that take place? Why has that way of living, that lifestyle, the way people interact with each other, why has it existed in that way all through the course of human history? Because there's a very specific reason for that. And a couple messages ago, we heard about humanism, right? So you can call it humanism, you can call it something else. All we have to say is, if people want to live the way they want to live, they're going to gravitate and do things that support that. And if they can be enhanced, if their lifestyles can be enhanced by doing that, they are going to. Because they need hope, don't they? If people reject God, which they do, What hope do they have? What hope do they have for a beautiful future? What hope do they have for peace and for happiness? Because if you reject God, you're going to have to make that peace and happiness and that wonderful society by yourself. Mankind will have to do it on his own and apart from God. But that can't happen, can it? True peace, true happiness will only come by God's truth and God's word. But if you reject God, you're not going to get there. So we can sit there and say, all right, if people don't have God, they have themselves. So they want to create a perfect society. They are being duped into thinking they can believe a perfect society will be created through what we've seen through this socialistic system. And again, why is this type of government the way Satan is deceiving people? Because again, it does two things. Those that crave lust and power and money and attention can filter to the top, and everybody else is going to filter to the bottom, and those are the ones that are going to be controlled. It is the way Satan can deceive humanity. It is part of Satan's lie. At the core, though, of this system is the belief that mankind can create their own happiness. And this is the way that they're trying to achieve it. Nimrod began with control in the cities and created a way of living, but that way of living was in place before the flood, and that way of living went to Egypt, and it went through to every single society and is extant today. We have been influenced by our past. So the next thing we're going to talk about is ancient Greece. You might say, why am I going to talk about Greece? What does Greece have to do with us today? Greece has a lot to do with us today because the foundation of our systems today are based on ancient Greece. Our beliefs of justice, our beliefs of the legal system, how do they work? Grecian philosophy. And it's not 100%, but there's a thread of thinking. So you want to look around at the world today, and we're trying to say, why is the world the way it is today? Why does the world think like it does today? Did it just happen all of a sudden? Or was there a learning process over time to get us here? And there has been a learning process. So let's take a look at ancient Greece and get a better understanding of why our world is the way it is today. The Greek philosophers like Plato, Pythagoras, and Aristotle, have you heard of them? They're the great minds of the earth, aren't they? Those minds affected us because they have shaped our society, because they've shaped the cultural values around the world. And we probably don't give much thought to that because we just live in the world that is around us. But we interact with judges. We interact with politicians. What do they believe and what is their belief system and how did they get there? Here's a quote from an article talks about ancient Greek philosophy shaped the foundations of Western thought and culture, leaving a legacy in areas such as ethics and politics. Its profound influence continues to shape our understanding of the world and our place in it today. So the world around us really has been based on Grecian philosophy. What I mentioned the other day, too, is Greek philosophy shaped Christianity. What we know as modern-day Christianity, nominal Christianity today. Christian fathers that we say, those in the past, liked the idea of Grecian thought, which was mankind can solve their own problems. So they had biblical teachings, and they said, well, you know what? I don't really want to just stick to biblical teachings. I want to do something else. I want to make something better for myself because I want to make a better society. Grecian thought, biblical teachings merge to form this conglomeration of something that God says is anti-God and is an abomination. So do you remember in high school, Pythagorean theorem in geometry? There is an individual named Pythagoras who created that theorem, but he was very influential in the world of Greece. Was he smart or was he demon-inspired? What do you think? Was Nimrod smart or was he demon-inspired? And if he was demon-inspired and believed in a certain belief system, and others throughout the course of history believed in the same thing, they probably believed the same thing too. He created a school to teach people, to teach young people, to say, how should you think? How should you think of justice? How should you think of eternal life? How do we interact and live with each other? He created a school where he taught magic. He spent 12 years in Babylon learning how to interact with demons. Because he interacted with demons. He was able to call upon demons. He was able to get influence from demons. He created a colony for people to live in, and the colony was based on communism. So Pythagoras was a communist who believed and interacted with demons, and he helped shape the thinking of our world today. He believed in the magic of numbers and letters. Say things over and over. You have certain numbers, certain special numbers, because they mean things to you and they have power. They can make good things happen or bad things happen. But there's powers in numbers and in letters. He believed in the immortality of the soul. He believed in man's ability to solve mankind's problems. He believed in all those things that Satan said are wrong, right? Reject God's truth and believe in the immortality of the soul. All of his followers believed the same thing. And I think we'll know one of his greatest followers was Plato. Has anybody heard of Plato? Plato is one of probably the greatest philosophers that has come out of ancient Greece. If you're going to be educated in this world in some fashion, in some way, somebody's going to study Plato. Plato was a follower of Pythagoras and his ideas, and he created his own version of thought, and his own version of thought is what helped influence Christianity, which is why it's become such an abomination over these years. Here's a quote connecting those two together. Plato's philosophical ideas have played a significant role in shaping Christian theology, particularly the incorporation of Platonic rites, the things that he does and the things how you operate your lives. The concept of the immortality of the soul, Satan's lie, as proposed by Plato, resonated strongly with early Christian thinkers. This belief that the soul is eternal and transcendent of the physical world influenced the Christian understanding of the afterlife and the importance of spiritual development over material pursuits. And that's from an online history website. So everybody knows this about Plato. So what is he saying? He's saying there's an immortal soul. He's saying he's going to follow somebody that believed in demons and interacted with demons. And he's going to create a way of thinking of justice and of mercy based on human values. That is the way society should interact. His emphasis was to study. His emphasis was to learn more from the carnal mind. So what was his basis of thinking? If we get together, we get really smart thinking people together, we can come up with some pretty cool ideas that are going to solve all of the world's problems. Forget this revealed knowledge of God. Forget whatever these biblical concepts are. The human mind is so powerful, it's so incredible. All we need to do is get us smart thinkers together, and we can solve society. We can create society in a way that everybody is going to have peace and happiness and prosperity. What did our parent organization do a number of years ago? I'm going to say they followed Plato and Aristotle and all the Greek thinkers, because our parent organization had the revealed truth, didn't they? God told an end-time servant, he revealed to an end-time servant what his truth was, and that's all we need to know. But what our parent organization did, a number of individuals in that organization, they rejected God, and they looked to whom? The scholars of the world. Because they said Mr. Armstrong was not smart enough, he wasn't technical enough, there's no way he could understand the things that we need to know for peace and happiness. We need to go to the scholars of the world to understand how we bring about peace and happiness. So who are the scholars of the world today? I'm saying they're no different than the scholars of the world back in ancient Greece time, who interacted with demons, who thought communism was a good style of governance, who believed in the immortality of the soul. So yes, we as an organization, our parent organization, rejected God's truth. How do you think God viewed that? Because he gave his truth. And we went to the scholars of the world. And I'm going to say we went to people that have a mindset that interacted with demons because they were influenced by demons to believe a lie, which is that God doesn't have all the answers. So Plato, he also wrote the book called The Republic. And some of you might have read that or might study that in school. It is really the best known work in the world. It is one of the most influential works of philosophy and political theory. It's one of the foundational works of our modern Western society. And this is what it does. And this is why it's important to us, because this is how everybody around the world thinks. And we are affected by them. It's an exploration of justice. Well, what is justice? Justice is what God says is right, isn't it? Well, this is mankind stating what they believe justice is, because it's not going to be what God's laws are. The nature of the soul, which is the immortality of the soul. The ideal form of government, which is socialism or communism, which is incorrect. It is an attempt to describe utopia. It's basically an attempt to say, how do we bring about the millennial reign and peace and happiness? It is doing it in this way by human thought and rejecting God's thought. Because he believed in Satan's lie and all these thoughts that are anti-God, anti-Christ, incorrect, created a system of belief, a system of governance, a system of education that has helped fool the world and help the world stay deceived. So much so that it affected our parent organization. That is the basis of Greek thought, which is no different than Egyptian thought, which is no different than Babylonian thought. It all carries through. It even carried through into Christ's time. So let's step forward. Here's another society. The Roman society, and I'm not going to get into politics or anything about that, but Rome and the Roman culture changed from a republic basically to a dictatorship. That was a style of government that took over and took control in the world, and the Pharisees were part of that system. Not in terms of the politics of the system, but they had their own way of living. They had their own belief system, and their belief system was anti-God, because the version of the religion of the Pharisees was not true. Yeah, they sat in Moses' seat. They were the physical descendants of Israelites who had the truth, but they corrupted it and they perverted it. They were engaging in a form of Baal worship, and they were supported by a system that allowed them to do that. So let's turn to Matthew chapter 23. We're going to read verses 1 through 3. Matthew 23 and verses 1 through 3. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore, whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. But do not you after their works, for they say and do not." And then verse 31. "Wherefore be you witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which killed the prophets." So who killed the prophets? Why are they who killed the prophets? They are part of that same system, aren't they? Continue down to verse 35. Because Christ then said, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, the son of Berechias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. All righteous blood of the earth, Christ was saying, was he was condemning the Pharisees for, because their way of thinking was no different than all those other ways of thinking throughout the course of human history, which was anti-God, anti-Christ. It was a rejection of divine revelation. So that is why in verse 35, Jesus Christ was telling the Pharisees that they were upholding Satan's system. The Pharisees corrupted God's word in a way so that they were basically equating the same thing as Babylonianism. Their way of thinking was no different. Christ was revealing the word, the truth, to them, and they were rejecting him. And haven't we seen that take place over the course of human history as well? God's truth was revealed, and people rejected it. That is the common theme that we are seeing and has taken place. So let's move forward. I'm going to talk about the French Revolution because this is an interesting one. I'm going to talk about the system that is continuing, why it has continued the way it is, and what people did then, which might have an effect on us in the future. Because in the past, I really didn't study anything about the French Revolution. I was thinking, hey, we had the American Revolution, who was founded in ideals of principle and liberty and freedom, and the French Revolution was pretty much the same thing. And the beginning stages of it, it was pretty much the same thing. It was really about the poor saying, we're being taken advantage of by a rich ruling class, and this is not fair, this is not equitable. We want a little bit of a better life. And there's really nothing wrong with that. So it started with good intention, but it was taken over by evil forces, just like it happens in every other point of time throughout human history. So let's take a look at some of the people who were responsible for the French Revolution, because what did they believe? Why did it take a turn the way it did, and what were they really advocating? And then how is that going to affect us in the future? The French Revolution, I'm going to say, was a movement that Nimrod would have approved. Think of it that way. So by 1791, so historical information here, France was governed by the Jacobins, those that were called the Jacobins, under an individual named Robespierre. So if you study the French Revolution, you know the name Robespierre. He was part of the Jacobins. The Jacobins were members of the Jacobin Club, a revolutionary political movement. Now, Robespierre and his generation were not taught by the church. They were brought up by secular teaching. Do you think taking God out of the school system had an effect on them? Do you see having God out of our public school system? Have you seen an effect on our culture today? It has a direct effect. And this is exactly what happened at that time. During the French Revolution, the Jacobins adopted policies that were based on occult teachings. Because occultism was all over the place in France at that time. And this is what started to happen. The Reign of Terror. The Reign of Terror was a period of state-sanctioned violence during the French Revolution from 1789 to 1799. It saw the public execution and mass killings of thousands of counter-revolutionary suspects, so to speak. Many of those who were overseeing this new leadership in the French Revolution worship Satan. Does that surprise you in any way? Because that doesn't look like the American Revolution, does it? It's completely different. So here's a part of something I want to mention about the French Revolution. Some information that is pretty horrible and pretty grotesque, but it's going to help you in the future. The atrocities, the violence, and the bloodshed that took place, we don't want to see you know about. On one occasion, 500 children were taken to a field and shot and stabbed and clubbed to death. How could somebody do that to innocent children? What kind of mindset do you have to do that to innocent children? One leader of that same movement began to drown who he called the enemies of the Republic. That was his way of eliminating them. Men and women, this is how it did. Men and women are stripped, tied together, and thrown in the river, and they drowned. In one town in particular, over 6,000 people were drowned in this method. They were called bathing parties or Republican marriages. Who did this work? Because the normal French people wouldn't do this work. So who did this work? I'm going to say thugs and criminals. And there were somewhere between 20,000 and 40,000 people that were hired to do this. Their goal was to eliminate the old regime, the old people who wanted principles of liberty and justice and fairness. Because the French Revolution was bringing about a new system of government. It was bringing about a new society. And here are people who are getting in the way. Here are people that were an obstacle towards the leaders of the French Revolution. They were the resistance. So because they were viewed as the resistance, great atrocities took place. And here is why we need to understand this and something like this. Because those that were leading the French Revolution, their way of thinking was no different than the Romans, no different than the Greeks, no different than the Egyptians, and no different than the Babylonians, because their way of thinking was the same. The way of thinking was based on this socialistic, Satan-inspired mindset. And when you have that mindset and you don't have God, when you're pushed far enough, what is going to happen? Violence and bloodshed. It's going to happen because that is the outcrop of that way of thinking. That same mindset might affect you in the future. So why did I give that example of what took place during the French Revolution? The leaders of the French Revolution being Satan-inspired. Because that is going to happen to us in the future. At some point in the future, I don't know exactly how it's going to be, and I don't know the very specifics. Why is the world going to turn against God's people? Why is the world going to hate God's people? Do you want this system that we're going to call Babylon or whatever it is, do you want this new system to take place on earth, or do you want God's system on earth? And I know you want God's system on earth. You are going to stand in the way. Somehow Satan is going to inspire individuals to say, those that are holding God's principles, they are the enemies of the Republic, just like those who didn't support those in the French Revolution. The world is going to turn on you, and those that are going to turn on you are going to have no problem with violence and murder and bloodshed, because that is their mindset. I do have to say, though, don't worry. God has your back. Do you believe that? Do you believe you are called out of this world? Do you believe you are God's special and priceless people? Nothing will happen to you that God says he doesn't want to have happen to you. But God says, remember, before that millennial reign takes place, bad things are going to happen. Who is going to commit those atrocities and the bad things? Those individuals that have a way of thinking that hasn't changed through the course of human history. They're going to turn on you for the exact same reason. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 10, we'll read verses 17 and 18. Matthew 10 and verses 17 and 18. But beware of men, for they shall deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues, And you shall be brought before governors and kings for my name's sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. Now, this verse has many applications, but what are they going to be doing? Let's say high level to God's people. They are going to be bringing them up into situations because they stand in the way and they want to get rid of you and eliminate you. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We're going to read verse 1 and 2 and then verse 9. Ecclesiastes 1, beginning in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Do you believe that verse? There is no new thing under the sun. So the reason I brought some of these bits of information up, what has happened in the past, what has happened in the past societies, is history repeats itself. Society moves along in a way, according to Satan's deception, under God's allowance, and nothing is different. So whether it was a system or way of thinking that was from Nimrod's Babylon, Egypt, Baal-worshipping, idolatrous Israel, Greece, Rome, the French Revolution, the way of thinking was the same, and the elimination of the undesirables was the same. And in the end, what I'm saying, we're going to be called the undesirables. So going back to the very first day, we're saying, is the world getting crazy? Yes. Is it strange why people are acting the way they're acting? Yes. Why are they making the decisions that they're making? We can't account for it, but in a way now, if we tie all these pieces together, we can account for it because they rejected God's truth. They rejected God. So because they don't have God, they need something to fill the void, and they have filled it with the carnal mind. They have filled it what we're going to call humanism, secular humanism. Mankind has become his own God. Mankind says we are going to solve our own problems. Mankind is demonically inspired, and Satan is duping mankind to say, if you want peace and happiness, I'm going to show you the way to get there. And the way that's going to get there is the way that causes human misery and destruction. So the world around us has never changed. The history shows it has never changed. And that way of thinking is translating to today. And that is what happens when people reject divine revelation and they reject God. So I'm going to bring a couple facts now to modern day America. Because we want to see how this system is affecting us right now. And you could sit there and say, it's Plato's way of thinking. It's Aristotle's way of thinking. It's Nimrod's way of thinking. It really doesn't matter. The basis of the thinking is all the same. The core thinking is similar. So here's the statement. Because I'd say we have been tremendously blessed. We've been in a bubble due to God's blessing, the blessings that came down from Abraham through his faithfulness, and we've lived in a time of peace and prosperity. Not everybody believes in peace and prosperity in the American way like we believe, do we? They're starting to react to it. They're starting to say America's not such a great country. The First Amendment really shouldn't exist because people, why should they be able to say whatever they want to say? How can those at the top of the food chain control you if you can say whatever you want to say and if you can listen to any kind of news source that you want to listen to? If they can't control you, and a lot of people are starting to think along that way. So here's a statement. If you don't like America, then just leave. Have you ever heard anybody say that? Because there's a lot of people out there right now that don't like America. They say it's rotten. They say it's founded on incorrect principles. Evil slave owners created this nation, and they did the backs on others, so we need to destroy everything that was in the past and get to the new way, kind of like the French Revolution, in a way. But We look at them and say, if you don't like the way it is now, why don't you just leave? Because no one's making you stay here. Have you questioned why they don't just leave? They're not going to leave because they have, I'm going to say, a Nimrod mindset. They have a Baal-worshipping mindset. They have Satan's mindset. They have a mindset that really believes in a socialist-type governance, which is really Satan's system. They don't believe in the individual freedoms that you and I believe in and other people believe in. The more that people have a socialist mindset, the less they're going to believe in God. And the less that they believe in God, they're going to believe that they need to create a society to bring about peace and happiness. And they're going to look at God-fearing people, people that have biblical principles, as the enemy to them. So they like the blessings from America. They don't understand it's from God, but they like those blessings. They think they have a moral cause to make America, in this instance, a better place. They have a moral cause, they have a moral right, and they know the way to bring about peace and happiness and prosperity. But they don't like what they have now? That's okay, I'm not going to leave, I'm not going to go anywhere else. I'm going to make it better, they're saying. It is their moral cause, and that's why they don't leave. So has it confused you in the past when people have said, I'm not going anywhere, I want to stay here? Because they think we are the problem. We're like those individuals that were in the way in the French Revolution. This place could be better without those people. So they want to make it better. So I'm saying in a part, if you try to have an argument or a discussion with somebody with those thinkings, you're never going to win that argument. You're never going to convince somebody that their moral cause is wrong if they're not open to it. You're never going to convince people if they're being demonically inspired that their cause is righteous. It's not going to happen. They are being influenced demonically. The world is being influenced demonically. Again, if we can think about this and understand this, it won't drive ourselves crazy when we see people doing these things. How easy is it for people to be influenced by demons? Wake up in the morning and we're influenced by demons. Millions and millions of people are being influenced in the same way. So all I'm saying is if you don't think demons are influencing the rest of the world to try to change this world, because Satan's trying to change this world, we need to think a little bit differently because it is happening. So how did they get to this place? How did they get to this way of thinking? Well, part of it came through the education system. People know what they know by how they're taught. So let's talk a little bit about the hatred of America and the education system, and we're going to look a little bit about the colleges and the universities in America. And it's really the same mindset all across the world, but we want to talk a little bit about here because it's really Nimrod's mindset at its core. Over the last number of years, we've seen an explosion of college students who don't like America. They detest the foundation of America. They like the blessings of America. They like going to school. They like the wealth of it, but they hate the system of America. And they say it needs to change. And most recently, we've seen that, haven't we, in protests, the pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel protests? These protests are not organic. It just doesn't happen by college students come up and say, hey, I want to do something a little differently. They are coordinated and agitated by evil forces, and these evil forces want to bring about the same type of socialist totalitarian government, the same system that Satan has pushed from the beginning of time. It really is no difference. So this is an article from the Boston Globe that describes this. It is from this year, and the headline is titled, "Socialism is at the core of the pro-Palestinian movement's next phase on college campuses." The pro-Palestinian organizers gathered for coffee, as the article goes. It's called Coffee with Comrades. And they gathered on a recent muggy morning in the middle of Pulaski Park in Northampton. The main speaker was a University of Massachusetts Amherst PhD candidate, and he took the stage. He donned a keffiyeh, which is that scarf, that kind of the patchwork scarf that the Palestinians use. And he had a Cuban Communist Party cap with a red star and began the readings of Vladimir Lenin, Joseph Stalin, and other communists. If you don't like America, why don't you leave? He obviously doesn't like America, does he? The quote continues, "The solution, though, the solution in many of their minds is a more egalitarian, right, a belief of equal justice and political justice and social justice and civil rights for all people. Democratic society, that hasn't worked. They're looking for communal ideas over profit. So they're looking for collective socialism, and they're looking for Babylon." This is where college campuses are now. So how did they get there? Why are they there? Was it by accident or was it by design? And I'm going to use this example here to show how Satan has been working his plan over the course of time. Because this thing is happening here, it's happening in education, and it's happening in every other facet of society. In the educational system, the purpose of mandatory education in the United States has two principal reasons. Number one, to break down the traditional family. And number two, to indoctrinate socialist ideas. Did you know about that, the public school system? It's not to teach our kids reading and writing and arithmetic. In the end, it's to break down the traditional family and instill socialist ideas, because if you can do that, you can change society. So look at what children were taught decades ago and look what they're taught now. Is it good now or is it bad now? And we know it's bad now. So to get to this point, how did the education system get to this point? Well, to do that, I'm going to have to talk about John Dewey. So John Dewey, who was born in 1859 and died in 1952, and he was a psychologist and a philosopher and educator who made many contributions to philosophy and psychology. His work continues influencing philosophy and the education system today. He was one of the most important figures in the 20th century in creating the educational system. And this is a quote by him. He says, "I believe that education is the fundamental method of social progress and reform." All right, well, what's social progress? Who is he to say progress? What does he mean by that? And what kind of reform? Does he want to reform society? Of course he does. But how does he want to reform society? What did he believe in? He was a major voice in progressive education and liberalism, and he was inspired by Charles Darwin. So right there, if he's inspired by Charles Darwin, we know he doesn't have a godly mindset, so he knows his mindset is all wrong. So why is this important? Because it shows how he and others have made efforts to change the system of education. And if you can change education, if you can change the way people think, you can change society. And isn't that what Satan's all about, is changing society? The efforts that he instituted created an environment where teachers were no longer teachers, teachers pushed for social reform and social progress. And they used what I'm going to say and what is termed as the process of gradualism. Things didn't happen overnight. It slowly happened, didn't it? A little bit here and a little bit there, and things started to change. If John Dewey used his knowledge as a psychologist and a philosopher to change education, well, what were those beliefs? And no, he wasn't solely responsible for the way education changed, but he was a major influence on it. He represents one of the major forces in it. He represents a mindset that still exists today. His mindset will answer these questions. Why are so many teachers liberal in their thinking? Why are so many teachers Marxist in their thinking? Why are so many elementary school teachers advocating socialism, transgenderism, and all other evils? Why do so many college professors hate America? Because they believe in Nimrod's Babylonianism. They call it their moral responsibility to promote social justice and equality. Their goal is to produce socialism. And what is one of the major organizations that has done that and has carried this philosophy through and is very influential? The National Education Association. They have significantly shaped education over the last number of decades. How have they done this? By the curriculum in schools. In the public school system, do you know what textbooks are used? Do you know why they're used? Do you know how they're selected? Who is hired as a teacher? And why are they hired as a teacher? There was an intentional plan years ago to put teachers in place to teach things that are going to hurt our children. That's the bottom line to it. So how does that work? Let's look on their own website and let's hear their description of what they are and what they're about. The National Education Association is more than 3 million people, educators, students, activists, workers, parents, neighbors, and friends who believe in opportunity for all students and in the power of public education to transform lives and create a more just and an inclusive society. Creating a more just and inclusive society is just code words for socialism. Their goal, the educational goal now, is to create Satan's society, is to create Satan's kingdom. And this is from their website as well. So let's not assume what they're trying to say, what they're trying to do. Let's just hear what they have to say. Their goal, social justice into our schools and transform our communities. That's what they want to do. It says, we are building and growing a community of activists committed to advancing social justice and policies in public education. Racial and social justice are economic justice. So all of this is advancing a school of thought and a way of thinking that is anti-God, because these teachers are not teachers anymore. These teachers are activists. That's why our schools are the way that they are. So what else do we hear in this world? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we know the ultimate author of diversity, equity, and inclusion is God, but that's not what is taking place in this world today. So the people and organization that promote education and fairness in the workplace have the same mindset as those that are running our schools. And they are everywhere in society. They're creating a modern Babylon and have been doing so for decades. So we can see it in religion just as well. I'm going to read something from the World Council of Churches. And it says, the World Council of Churches, they are inspiring the worldwide fellowship of churches to work together for unity, justice, and peace. And it sounds pretty good, unity, justice, and peace, doesn't it? But what kind of unity, justice, and peace are they after? Gender justice, social justice, economic justice, which are all code words for socialist way of thinking. So what does God say about economic justice? Let's take a look at that, because he says many things. I want to contrast this to the world that's out there. So let's turn to Leviticus chapter 15, and we'll read verse 22. Leviticus 15 and chapter 22. And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger. I am the Eternal, your God. So here we have somebody who has some level of economic wealth because they have a harvest and there are poor around. The landowner is not required to give them of their field. They're required to leave something so somebody, if they want to take some initiative, can take some of the harvest. They can help themselves, but they have to put forward some effort. This is not describing a socialist system. This is describing God's system. This is not a diversity, equity, inclusion. This is not a socialist type philosophy. This is a philosophy that says people should give to other people. It's not that a central government or people will take it from you and give it to other people. So let's read in Deuteronomy chapter 15, 11 through 14. Deuteronomy 15, verses 11 through 14. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother, to thy poor and to thy needy in thy land. And if thy brother, an Hebrew man or an Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee, and serve thee 6 years, and in the seventh year thou shalt let him go free. And when thou sendest him out free from thee, thou shalt not let him go away empty. Thou shalt furnish him liberally out of thy flock, and out of thy floor, and out of thy winepress, and of that wherewith the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, thou shalt give unto him. So yes, we are to give, but we are to give individually. We're not going to give to a central power who's going to distribute it for us. So today, every system that we see is doing the opposite of what God said, isn't it? Is there justice in this world? Is there equity in this world? I don't see any of it. And the reason there is not is because the way the world thinks and believes is the wrong way. And why are they thinking the wrong way? It's because they were taught the wrong way. Do you feel like an outsider in this world? Do you feel like it's getting so crazy that you don't fit in? You don't believe with the politics of the world. You don't believe in the economic system in the world. You don't believe in the education system of the world. Do you want a better way? And I think we all do, because that's why we're here, is to look forward to a better way, to look forward to that millennial reign, to look forward to God telling every single person, I will show you justice, I will show you mercy, I will show you how to have economic prosperity, and I will show you how to do it on your own with my help and through the help of the Holy Spirit, because you will have that power in the future. That world does not exist today. That world did not exist in the past, and it has never existed. There will be difficult times ahead in the future. Tribulation will come, and we know that. I want to reemphasize the point that the forces that are out there, even though they're by God's design, they can't hurt you if you're close to God. Nothing is going to happen to you unless God says it's His time for it to happen to you. So, number one, we have God's truth. We have the opportunity to become part of God's family. And we can help each other. We can look at the world around us and not be influenced by the world around us. How easy is that to do? Not really. How easy was it for ancient Israel, even after they went through the Red Sea, even after they saw all those miracles, they had God's truth, but they departed from it? Ham and Cush and Nimrod, they did the same thing. Adam and Eve, they did the same thing. They rejected God. And that is what we've seen through the course of human history. You and I are no different. The point of bringing some of this information today is to help bring some clarity as to what is happening and is why. And it doesn't really matter what it's called, as I mentioned before. There are powerful forces out there that are designed to separate you from God. They're designed to separate me from God. If you get confused, if you get agitated, if you get scared, that can happen. Do you think it really matters how and why you separate yourself from God? Because Satan sure doesn't care. And he's going to throw anything out there that he can to separate you from God. So what we all really need to do is take a look into our own lives and say, what are we scared of? What do I have a problem with in terms of what God's allowing in my life? And do I have an issue with it? Am I looking to somebody in the world to solve my problems? Am I fearful of the world in the next number of weeks and months and years? Is there a potential Savior coming on board before our Savior Jesus Christ comes on board? And in 3 weeks' time, we'll see who comes on board. But it's not going to be our Savior, whoever it is, because we know in the end, God's not going to allow that to happen. Satan is building his system, and he's been building it throughout the whole course of humanity. God's people have always been caught up in this system. I don't want any of us to get caught up in this system. Are there ways in our lives where we can identify potential traps where we're getting caught up in this system? We need to do that individual homework. Do you see Babylon around you? I hope you see it. Have you seen it over the course of history? I hope you've seen it. If you've seen it through historical examples, if you see it around you now, are you prepared to see it in the future as things start to take place? Because if you can identify the things that are going to start to take place in the future, maybe, just maybe, you will not react, but you'll be able to call on your knowledge of God and what He's done for you and His connection to you, and He will sustain you. Because God does want to sustain you. And He's given you every tool and opportunity and power to do that. There's no need for us to be afraid. There's no need for us to worry about the system around us, to term it in a certain way. There's no need for us to worry about what our neighbors are doing. Because you have everything that you need. I think we all need to take a step back and look at the examples through time. look at ancient Israel, because ancient Israel had all the blessings from God. They had the miracles from God. They had the support from God, and they chose to depart from God. They allowed the system around them to pull them in, and we can allow the system around us to pull ourselves in as well. We like being here in the bubble, don't we? We love being here in the bubble of peace and tranquility and happiness. When we leave, we need to maintain that mini bubble around us and not let whatever else out there affect us. Don't worry about the system because it can't hurt you. God will protect you. Next time, when we go over some information, I want to talk about some of the things that are taking place in the world, in society, that are going to affect us or can affect us as well. So we can look at that and say, why are people doing what they're doing, and are they affecting me, and is it affecting my mind? Because I might be doing the same thing that ancient Israel is doing and not understand it. I want to show, number one, not through history, what has taken place in society. I want to show you some of the things that we partake of in our daily lives that can slowly suck us in, and we can end up being in a state like ancient Israel, where we departed from God and we didn't even think that we did. We'll talk a little bit more about that next time.
The Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented Understanding Satan's Kingdom Number 3, a message given by Mr. Robert Burke for the morning service of the third day of the Feast of Tabernacles in Townsend, Tennessee, October 19th, 2024.